Okay, let's unpack this. When you hear strategic plan, your eyes might instinctively glaze over a little, right? It conjures images of endless PowerPoints and, dry corporate jargon.
Yeah, exactly.
But what if I told you it's actually a truly fascinating roadmap for an organization's future, especially when that organization is shaping the education of thousands of pupils, potentially including your own?
It's absolutely true. Think of it less as a dusty document and more as like a detailed blueprint for impact.
Right.
And today, we're diving deep into precisely that. The Birlasduna Academy Trust's 2025-2028 strategic plan. Our entire discussion, every insight we share, it's all built from this single comprehensive PDF document.
A single source. Got it.
Yeah, it's a pretty thorough peek behind the curtain of an educational powerhouse, actually.
That's right. Our mission with this deep dive isn't to just summarize what's on the page. It's more about extracting the most important nuggets of knowledge and insight to reveal how a large educational organization plans to shape the day-to-day experience for its pupils and staff. It's sort of your shortcut to understanding the detailed commitments that drive their whole vision.
And right from the introduction, there's an immediate aha moment that truly encapsulates their philosophy. It's just their overarching aspiration, aspiration family success.
Aspiration family success. Okay.
Yeah. And this isn't just a catchy phrase, you know. It immediately signals a holistic, community-centric approach. It moves beyond just academic metrics to emphasize the entire family unit's role in a child's success.
Which feels different, doesn't it? Compared to maybe more traditional school plans.
Definitely. It's a crucial differentiator, I think.
That's a powerful distinction.
Yeah.
And it's underpinned by a foundational commitment stated right there in the intro.
The core promise.
Children receive one opportunity for a good education, and the trust is dedicated to ensuring that we provide the highest standards to maximize this opportunity. That sets a pretty high bar from the outset.
It does indeed, and it implies a significant commitment, you know, to resources and training, which we'll definitely see outlined later on.
Okay.
So moving into the core, their vision statement is all about creating and fostering a culture of high aspiration, enjoyment for learning, academic success, and lifelong skills.
Right.
But what's really critical here is that this applies to all pupils, regardless of their social, economic, or cultural background, that inclusivity is a central sort of non-negotiable theme throughout the whole plan.
And their aims really drill down into their identity, don't they? They want to be a strong local partnership of schools.
Yeah.
And while they aim for a cohesive trust identity with shared high expectations for behavior and achievement, they explicitly recognize that each school within the trust has its own unique characteristics. So it's not a one-size-fits-all thing.
No, exactly. And what's fascinating here is how collaboration is highlighted. It's the core mechanism to ensure all schools benefit from each other's strengths.
Sharing best practice,
Oh,
presumably.
precisely. And then there's that phrase, unflinching commitment to closing the gap in attainment between disadvantaged and non-disadvantaged pupils.
Unflinching. That's strong wording.
It is. It isn't just a general statement. It's a clear, measurable goal that really puts equity right at the forefront.
Now, as a public service, the trust anchors its ethical compass to something called the Nolan Principles. For those who might not be familiar, what exactly are these principles? How do they guide a trust like this?
That's a great question. So the Nolan Principles are basically seven core values. They guide the conduct of pretty much all holders of public office, and that includes people within an educational trust.
Aren't you?
They are selflessness, integrity, objectivity, accountability, openness, honesty, and leadership.
Right.
In practice, this means individuals within the trust are expected to act, you know, solely in the public interest, avoid any personal gain or undue influence, make decisions impartially based on merit.
Objectively.
Yes. Be responsible for their decisions, be transparent, truthful, and, well, set a good example through leadership.
So it's about maintaining public trust.
Fundamentally, yes. Upholding ethical standards in every single decision the trust makes.
Okay. So from these big ethical principles, the plan then dives into what they call abiding principles. These seem to shape the actual experience within the schools.
Exactly. They're more granular.
Let's start with citizenship. They commit to developing pupils as global citizens who actively engage in positive social change. What does that look like day to day?
Well, it means more than just learning facts about the world. It includes fostering positive attitudes and persistence, teaching children to stick with it even when things get tough.
Resilience.
Exactly. Encouraging a culture where pupils actively support each other's well-being and building consistent good behavior so that learning environments are always productive.
Right.
They even set a challenging goal of reducing the need for exclusion.
Which says a lot.
It really does. It speaks volumes about their belief in proactive support and intervention rather than just reacting. And this also extends to staff development, too. Ensuring educators are equipped to meet the increasing and, frankly, often complex demands of pupils. It shows a truly holistic view of citizenship.
Okay, next is the curriculum. Their key responsibility here is high-quality teaching and learning in every classroom each day.
The core business, really.
They want a curriculum that's consistent, coherent, balanced, and broadly based, promoting spiritual, moral, cultural, mental, and physical development, and preparing children for later life. That sounds like a lot to pack in.
It is.
How do they ensure this broad, rich curriculum isn't just theory? And crucially, how do they measure its impact?
That's a critical point. The plan emphasizes collaboration across schools, which helps maintain consistency.
Okay.
And lots of firsthand experiences, like practical activities, visits out of school, plus a broad range of extracurricular opportunities. Think sports, arts, technology, languages, music.
Bringing learning to life.
Exactly. And crucially, they state a preference for formative assessment.
Formative assessment. What does that mean in practice?
So this is where the real magic happens, I think. It's the day-to-day ongoing feedback, the nurturing assessment that helps shape learning as it's happening.
Ah, so not just tests at the end.
Right. It's not solely relying on summative tests or just measuring progress at the end of a unit. It's about constant adjustment and support based on what teachers see students doing right now.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And speaking of teaching, they have great teaching abiding principles. The core purpose is crystal clear: every child succeed.
Yeah.
What's fascinating is that these principles do not impose a single teaching policy or lesson format. Instead, they offer what they call common ground and best bets.
And that's a vital distinction. It promotes pedagogical freedom, teacher creativity, but within a shared framework of what works.
Okay.
They break down great teaching into four key aspects. First, high expectations.
Right.
This means embedding strong routines, consistently applying behavior policies, ensuring high participation from all pupils, and reinforcing effort.
So making the most of classroom time.
Essentially, yes. Aiming for every moment to be well used, with children thinking hard about learning, free from distraction.
Okay, aspect one. What's second?
Second is explaining and modeling. This means presenting new information in small, manageable steps, explicitly teaching vocabulary, which is huge, giving clear and detailed explanations, and modeling excellence. Not just showing the finished product, but how an expert thinks through the task.
Showing the process.
Exactly. The goal is to avoid information overload and make sure children really grasp key ideas before moving on.
Third aspect.
Third is checking and adapting. This involves asking a high quantity of questions, not just one or two, to really check understanding.
Right.
And actively rejecting mere self-reports, when a child just says, "Yeah, I get it." They want evidence of understanding.
Right.
And then adapting planning based on those checks, based on emerging needs. There's also a strong focus here on understanding diverse needs, SEND, EEL pupils.
Special educational needs and disabilities, and English as an additional language.
Correct. Making sure teaching adapts for everyone.
And finally, the fourth aspect.
Practice. This means lots of opportunities for core skills, reading, writing, math-structured repetition, and guided practice.
Repetition being key for memory.
Absolutely. They start with scaffolding, support, but then gradually remove it to build independence. But here's where it gets really interesting.
Oh.
They explicitly say they don't shy away from challenging work that might lead to mistakes.
That feels different. Many plans talk about building skills, but emphasizing embracing mistakes. What does that tell us?
I think it tells us they value resilience and deeper learning over just surface-level perfection. The idea is that practice helps core skills become automatic, right?
Frees up brain space.
Exactly. It frees up precious working memory for more advanced thinking. It strengthens long-term memory, yes, but critically, by encouraging children to tackle new challenges and learn from errors, it fosters genuine independence and what we call a growth mindset.
Believing you can improve.
Precisely. It's a powerful approach that recognizes learning isn't always neat and linear. Sometimes you have to stumble a bit.
Okay, moving to the youngest learners, early years education. This is about recognizing rapid child development, physical, intellectual, emotional, social, the whole lot.
Yeah, a crucial stage.
They aim to support and extend knowledge and skills, ensure all children feel included and valued regardless of background, and build positive relationships with parents.
Mm-hmm. The plan highlights a structured curriculum with three strands: provision for different starting points, relevant content matching young children's needs, and planned purposeful activity.
Purposeful activity.
Yes. And here's a crucial nugget that really shapes their approach. They explicitly state that practitioners shouldn't distinguish between play and work.
Interesting. Play is work for young children, isn't it?
That's exactly the philosophy. Both are seen as equally valid and important opportunities for teaching and learning. It breaks down those traditional barriers and really maximizes engagement.
Next up, health and well-being. This is clearly seen as a non-negotiable for effective teaching and learning.
Absolutely fundamental. You can't learn effectively if you're not well, physically or mentally.
They commit to promoting positive mental health for every staff member and child, using both universal SO for everyone and targeted approaches for specific needs, and actively addressing mental ill health.
Which is so important. They recognize the contribution of PE and sport, naturally. And they note that relationships, sex and health education, RSHE, is crucial in preparing pupils for adult life.
Right.
A specific detail that caught my eye is their use of trauma perceptive practice.
Trauma perceptive practice. Tell me more.
It's an approach to develop pupils' self-regulation and self-awareness. It acknowledges the often unseen challenges and trauma many children face and offers a structured way to support their emotional development. It's increasingly vital in schools today.
Definitely. Okay, equality and inclusion is next. The Klan states, it's truly at the heart of our trust, with a passion for families and treating everyone with equity. This isn't just a buzzword, though. They delve into a practical approach called universal design for learning. Can you explain that concept?
Absolutely. Universal Design for Learning, or UDL, is basically an inclusive by design approach.
Inclusive by design.
Yeah. So instead of adapting lessons after you realize some learners are struggling, UDL means designing lessons from the very beginning to accommodate the inherent variability in all learners.
Like building a ramp into the original building design instead of adding it on later.
That's a perfect analogy. Exactly. This increases the sense of belonging for all pupils and proactively removes barriers before they even become an issue.
Makes sense.
And they commit to encouraging all staff to become a teacher of SEND, meaning every educator, regardless of their main subject or role, embraces the responsibility to support pupils with special educational needs. It fosters a greater spirit of inclusion across the entire school.
Right. Everyone's job.
Pretty much.
Finally, under abiding principles, we have community and partnerships. They believe that preserving local school identity and ethos goes hand in hand with school improvement and community development for a deeper, long-lasting impact. What exactly do they mean by community in this context? It sounds quite broad.
That's an important question because they define it very broadly. They commit to fostering positive interactions, supporting community cohesion, for example, aiming for lower crime rates through engagement, which is quite ambitious.
Wow, yeah.
And encouraging international mindedness. But when they say community, the plan expands it far beyond just the immediate school gates.
Okay.
It includes the trust itself, diocesan connections for church schools, the school's immediate geographical area, the wider UK, and even the global dimension.
A truly interconnected view.
Very much so. How a school functions within society at multiple levels.
So we've covered the what and the why of their vision, these guiding principles that underpin everything they do. But, you know, vision without execution is just a dream, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. Now we get to the nuts and bolts.
This next section is where the rubber hits the road. The practical how. How they plan to turn these principles into tangible realities for every child and staff member.
Right.
The strategic plan outlines 5 strategic priorities, or SPs. These are essentially their practical guides for achieving their vision.
Precisely. SP1 is all about developing our schools and pupils.
Okay.
The overarching goal here is ambitious but clear. For all schools to achieve secure, strong, or exemplary Ofsted grades.
Those are the official UK inspection ratings. a clear target.
Very clear, very quantifiable. Key focuses within this priority include developing that aspirant mindset we talked about, actively closing attainment gaps, supporting mental health and well-being, and undertaking a significant digital transformation.
Ah, yes, the digital transformation. They've identified five key areas for their digital strategy: a digital community, integrated digital practice, digital skills, digital citizenship, and innovation creativity. This isn't just about giving kids tablets, is it?
Oh, not at all. When they talk about digital transformation, they're working towards meeting six core digital standards by 2030.
Six core standards.
Yeah, which, for those unfamiliar, typically cover everything from robust cybersecurity and data privacy to ensuring equitable access to technology and digital literacy for all students and staff. It's a massive undertaking.
So truly integrated.
Yes, it reflects a really comprehensive approach to technology integration, not just, you know, adding gadgets.
And beyond the formal curriculum, there's a strong emphasis on enrichment.
Yes, broadening horizons.
This means providing a wide range of exciting opportunities like sports, music, performing arts, trips, and even residential experiences for all year groups.
On the academic front, there's a major focus on core academics, or CACC, which is the ability to speak fluently and grammatically, really important.
Often overlooked, perhaps?
Can be, yeah. Plus reading, writing, and mathematics. The plan ensures that specific knowledge in other subjects is explicitly taught and built upon over time.
So lessons aren't just isolated events.
No, they're sequences of learning designed for deeper understanding, building blocks.
They also detail how parents will be supported, providing information and resources on mental and physical well-being, clear communication channels for concerns, and practical ideas for extending learning at home. It's like they view parents as key partners.
They absolutely do, which fits that family part of their aspiration.
Right. Makes sense.
Next up is SP2, developing our people.
Staff focus.
Big time. Their overarching goal here is to be an employer of choice in Essex education. They recognize that staff are the very foundation of everything they do.
Employer of choice, that's a high aim.
It is, and this priority is deeply values-led, grounded in those Nolan principles we discussed earlier, and aligned with the Department for Education's teacher recruitment and retention strategy. So very current.
It's impressive that they have such a clear, sort of three-pronged approach for their staff. What does welcoming great people actually entail?
Well, it's about making a strong first impression and a smooth entry into the trust. This includes things like a clear, accessible website, streamlined recruitment processes, meaningful induction for new staff.
Like just handing them a pile of papers?
Hopefully not. And actively championing equity and diversity from the outset, ensuring everyone feels they belong from day one.
Okay. Then, retaining great people. This must be huge, given teacher workload issues.
Absolutely critical. This involves reducing unnecessary workload. They explicitly mentioned that.
Yeah.
Providing high-quality mentoring for new staff, robust leadership development opportunities, competitive reward packages, well-being support like employee assistance programs and occupational health.
Practical support.
Yes. And embedding staff voice processes, making sure people feel heard. It's about creating an environment where people actually want to stay.
And the third prong.
Developing great people. This commitment is to structured professional growth across all career stages, encouraging participation in National Professional Qualifications, or NPQs.
Those are the government-endorsed leadership qualifications.
That's right. Things like specializing in curriculum design or behavior management, or even preparing for headship. It shows a commitment to formal, high-level professional development,
right?
Plus coaching, building learning partnerships, and proactive succession planning. Thinking ahead to ensure leadership resilience for the future.
Okay, that covers people. Moving on to SP3, developing our governance. The focus here is enhancing local accountability and responsiveness to the communities each academy serves.
Yeah, making sure the trust doesn't feel too distant from the schools.
How do they ensure that the trust leadership remains accountable to individual schools and their local communities?
They lay out very specific actions. This includes ensuring qualified auditors, providing timely and accurate reports to the trustees.
Transparency.
Yes. Having nominated trustees for each school to maintain that direct link. Developing trustees to become hub leaders. Building on existing training.
Growing internal capacity.
Exactly. And actively recruiting governors and trustees from the local community to strengthen those crucial links between the school and its neighborhood. It's about a multi-layered approach to oversight.
Got it. SP4 is all about developing our business, facilities, and resources. The objective here is making sure every penny counts, every resource is maximized, and that their operations are built to last.
Efficiency, effectiveness, sustainability, the practical stuff that makes everything else possible.
So what are the core areas here?
Well, designing a robust financial plan, obviously. Ensuring IT infrastructure is fit for purpose, secure, and accessible. Remember those six core digital standards by 2030 they're aiming for.
Right, covering security, learning environments.
The whole lot.
Yeah.
They also promote environmental responsibility, actively reducing their carbon footprint and increasing renewable energy.
Green initiatives.
Yes. Plus, there's a commitment to continuous investment in the actual buildings, ensuring they are pleasant, safe, accessible, stimulating, and environmentally friendly spaces for learning.
The physical environment matters.
Cute.
Last but not least for the strategic pillars is SP5. Developing our community and partnerships. This builds on that core belief that school improvement and community development go hand in hand.
Yeah, for deeper, long-lasting impact. This is where their vision of global citizens really comes alive, I think.
How so?
They aim to foster closer relationships with neighboring schools while respecting their independence, which is important.
Collaboration, not competition.
That's the stated aim. Joining educational research projects to push the boundaries of what works, sharing staff development programs beyond the trust.
Spreading the benefit.
Right. And crucially, growing multi-agency working, partnering with people like youth support, the police, social pair.
Joined up thinking.
Exactly. They also look to build links with work placement providers and, importantly, refine people voice.
Pupil voice.
Yeah. Making sure students' opinions and ideas can actually affect change within schools and communities. Ensuring students are active participants in shaping their own environment.
Okay, so we have the vision, the principles, and these five big strategic priorities for how they'll get there.
Mm-hmm.
So with all that outlined, how does the trust envision its own growth? And maybe more importantly, how do they measure if all these ambitious plans are actually working on the ground?
Right, the accountability piece.
Yeah.
That brings us to their growth strategy and monitoring and evaluation.
Okay.
The Trust's ambition is clearly stated to create a strong, sustainable family of local schools. And it's driven, they say, by a powerful moral obligation to improve educational and life outcomes.
Moral obligation.
Yeah, strong words again. But they also explicitly state they won't expand without having the capacity to properly support new schools. It's not growth for growth's sake.
And they lay out specific considerations for when a school proposes to join.
They do. While that moral obligation is the overriding factor, they also weigh the school's size, financial position, distance from their base, its current Ofsted category, and the existing leadership capacity. It seems like a considered, careful approach.
And they also say what they won't do.
Yes, which is interesting. They say they won't put competition before collaboration, won't expand through sponsorship if their existing academies aren't already strong.
Right. Get your own house in order first.
Exactly. Or do anything detrimental to neighboring communities.
Yeah.
This seems important for maintaining trust and those community ties, which goes back to their core principles again.
What's this hub model they talk about?
Ah, yeah, that's fascinating. They aim to grow local hubs of maybe 8 to 10 schools.
Yarn.
Ideally within about 45 minutes drive of Basildon, which is their base. The idea is to facilitate deep collaboration and a common ethos within those hubs.
Manageable clusters.
Precisely. They anticipate growing to no more than 3 such hubs, ensuring manageable size and focused support.
And they mentioned specific growth opportunities too.
Yes, things like potentially opening primary and secondary free schools, developing more specialist provisions like SEMAH, that's social, emotional, and mental health support, and recruiting dedicated school improvement leaders specifically for secondary education and for SEND. It seems like strategic expansion aimed at meeting specific needs in the area.
Okay. Now, on to the monitoring and evaluation section. This outlines their relentless drive, their words, to continually improve quality and inform self-evaluation. They use trust key performance indicators or KPIs.
Yep, the metrics.
What kind of metrics are we talking about here? Can you give some examples?
Yes, absolutely. They give concrete examples across various domains, which really illustrates their commitment to accountability. For governance, for instance, KPIs include things like annual skills audits for their board members, making sure they have the right expertise, filling vacancies with people who have aligned skills, compliance with the Department for Education's definition of a strong trust, and ensuring robust questioning happens in meetings.
Keeping the leadership sharp.
Exactly. For financial KPIs, they aim for 0 reportable audit findings, clean audits. Very. timely and accurate statutory submissions, and ensuring balanced school budgets with target reserves they specify between 5-20% of annual income. So demonstrating financial health and transparency.
Okay, what about people?
HR. Under human resources, they're looking to increase staff attendance aiming above 95%, achieve 100% permanent vacancies filled at the first stage of recruitment, which is ambitious,
worry,
and have 90% or higher staff satisfaction regarding things like professional development, feeling like they belong, and having their voice heard. These are crucial for creating that positive work environment they're aiming for.
And education itself.
Yeah.
The core purpose.
In education, they target 85% or higher pupil and parent satisfaction. Ambitious and knowledge-rich curricula being evident. Meeting national statutory outcomes for phonics and key stage 2 SATs, those are the national tests for 10 and 11-year-olds.
Right.
Ensuring fair access for all pupils and consistent attendance at or above national averages.
And leadership?
For leadership, KPIs include positive Ofsted outcomes, obviously, specific praise for leadership within Ofsted reports, and clear evidence of attracting, developing, and retaining talented staff. They even want to measure professional learning by its direct impact on school development and pupil outcomes.
Tying PD directly to results.
Yes. So what these KPIs really show, taken together, is their rigorous commitment to accountability and transparency. It's how they plan to ensure that their grand vision isn't just words on a page, mm-hmm. but translates into measurable progress that impacts the day-to-day experience of pupils and staff.
That's really clear. So how do they actually monitor all this on an ongoing basis? It sounds like a lot to track.
It is. They employ a diverse range of methods. This includes actively tracking learner progress data, analyzing attendance and behavior data closely, scrutinizing samples of pupils' work.
Looking at the evidence?
Exactly. Conducting moderated lesson observations and learning walks, so seeing teaching in action. Linking professional development directly to school outcomes, like we just mentioned. Engaging in extensive consultation with pupils, staff, and parents, getting feedback.
Listening.
Yes. And implementing rigorous quality assurance checks from the trust leadership team itself. It's a comprehensive, multifaceted approach, not just relying on one data point.
Okay. Finally, to ensure transparency and provide targeted support, they have a system that categorizes schools based on performance.
Mm-hmm.
Green, amber, and red.
Right. Traffic lights, essentially.
This directly links to the level of support provided by the trust. So it's differentiated support based on need.
Exactly. For green schools, the ones doing well, there's maximum autonomy for their local governing body. Trust supervision is pretty limited.
Light touch.
Yeah, typically just a light touch, maybe half day per term from the CEO and an allocated central team leader. It's essentially a system of earned trust and autonomy.
Makes sense. What about amber schools?
Amber schools are subject to what they call close supervision. Their local governing body powers are somewhat restricted, and trust support increases significantly.
Okay.
This might include, say, 2 A's per term from the CEO, dedicated support for their action plans, and half-termly monitoring of progress. It's a clear signal that more intensive support is being deployed.
And red schools.
For red schools, it's intensive support. This means fortnightly visits from the CEO, weekly direct guidance from an executive lead, and potentially the placement of an interim academy board to take over governance temporarily.
So pretty hands-on intervention.
Very much so. This level of support ensures swift, decisive action when standards aren't being met. It really shows their dedication to that commitment of providing the highest standards possible. It's a very transparent and structured approach to intervention, ensuring that all schools within the trust are supported to achieve the best possible outcomes.
And there you have it, a deep dive into the Burles-Duna Academy Trust's 2025-2028 strategic plan. We've journeyed from their broad vision and guiding principles all the way through to their granular KPIs and support systems.
Mm.
It shows just how comprehensive and, well, ambitious their roadmap is.
Yeah, it really does. And at its heart, this entire deep dive, everything we've talked about, it's about securing high-quality education and promoting well-being for everyone involved, all underpinned by that powerful ethos of aspiration, family, and success.
So a final thought for you, our listener. Considering the diverse and evolving challenges in education today, what specific element of the strategic plan, maybe it's the universal design for learning or that teacher ascend concept, or perhaps the structured hub growth model, what element do you think is most crucial for long-term success in transforming educational outcomes? Something to mull over.